And joining us on Perspectives today is Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz, and she is an award-winning nonfiction writer, poet, and touring author. She was born and raised in Philadelphia. She first visited the Mutter Museum in the fourth grade, and she lives now in Austin, Texas. Thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me on, Louis. I'm really grateful.
Now, as far as I mentioned that you went to the museum, and silly me, I hadn't even mentioned the book yet, but is that the way you pronounce his last name, Mutter?
You know, it's a disagreement, even among the Mutter Museum staff. Mutter was definitely born Tom Mutter without the umlaut. But when he went to Paris to study medicine and learned about plastic surgery and decided he was going to be the face of this new brand of surgery, he added an umlaut to his name to add a little more flair and get a little more attention. And I believe that when he added the umlaut, he altered the pronunciation, that he became Mutter. But to this day, no one knows how he pronounced his last name. So really, either way is correct.
Okay. Well, thank you for that information. And as I mentioned before, we are visiting with Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz. She is a New York Times bestseller author, and the book is called Dr. Mutter's Marvels, and it's a true tale of intrigue and innovation in the dawn of modern medicine. And there's some incredible pictures in here, or drawings, and just the stories themselves.
You know, the Mutter Museum, which is maybe how most people are familiar with the name Mutter, is sort of this infamous museum in Philadelphia. It's a museum of what would we call 19th century medical oddities. So skeletons of conjoined twins and women with horns growing from their heads and 9-foot human colons. And it's a rite of passage for anyone who grew up in Philadelphia to go on a school trip to the Mutter Museum. And what they do that's so brilliant is they use the unusual. They say, here are things that normal life you'd be told never to look at, especially as a child. If you walked into a supermarket, there was a woman with a horn growing from her head, your mother would say, look anywhere but at that woman. But here at the Mutter Museum, you know, they invite people in and say, take a closer look, ask questions, understand why these things occur and how we treated them in the 19th century and how we treat them today. And I tried to use that technique in Dr. Mutter's Marvels to sort of take all of these unusual stories of medicine and use it to illuminate what America was like in that time period. And I'm really gratified by the response the book received in hardcover. I mean, to be a New York Times bestseller for 3 months was beyond my wildest expectations for what to me was a tribute to a hometown museum. But I'm really happy about that and thrilled to be now touring behind the paperback this fall.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz, and she is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Dr. Mutter's Marvels. Kristen, I was wondering as I started reading this book that because it's so interesting, why is it that no one else, somebody else did write about it, and but then it was not as good as yours because I guess they left out a lot of parts and the fact that there's so much to say about this doctor. And I was wondering, how did you go about getting interested in this? Was it when you first visited the museum that you thought about this?
Growing up in Philadelphia, you really, the Mutter Museum is a part of your childhood. And like so many things that happened to you during your childhood, you assume everyone have these experiences. I didn't realize that a medical oddity science museum was an unusual thing to bring a child to until I left Philadelphia. And people began to ask, why does this museum exist? And who is this Mutter person that founded it? And for as much as I had been there, I never knew the answers to those questions. And it turns out that Mutter's story was truly lost to history. I mean, even to this day, he doesn't even have so much as a Wikipedia page. So I went to college at NYU and paid my way through. I came from a working class background, and so I was always on the lookout for scholarships or grants that would help me offset the cost of my education. And the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, which is a great organization that encourages storytelling of scientific stories, put out a fellowship at NYU for the best play or screenplay based on the life of a scientist or a scientific discovery. And I thought, I could do this. You know, I'm a nerd. I love nonfiction my whole life, and I just need to think of a story that maybe no one else has ever told. And of course, the Mutter Museum was the first thing that came to my mind. I looked him up. There was nothing on the internet about him. And I wrote the museum and said, look, I know I'm not the likeliest person to invite into your medical archive. I'm an undergraduate studying screenwriting. At that time, I was running a poetry slam out of the basement of CBGB's, the historic punk venue in New York City. but I'm really interested in the story and I want to see if there's something there. And, you know, to their credit, you know, they let me in. They said, we would, you know, that's the point of the museum, is to inspire and stoke, curiosity about medicine and science. And we would love to have you come in and share with you anything we have. And that was the beginning of the journey towards this book. And that would be 15 years ago this December that I first stepped into the archive. So it took about 14 and a half years from that first day to the book coming out. But it was well worth it. You know, it was hard research to do, but the stories that I found were so fun and strange and illuminating. And I'm really grateful to be the one who gets to share it in Dr. Mutter's Marvels.
We're visiting with award-winning author Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz, and she has written Dr. Mutter's Marvels. It says, you talked a little bit about the screenplay that you wrote for this award, and you got that, but I'm surprised that nobody has picked it up as far as, you know, making a movie or even a documentary.
Well, as you stated, his story had pretty much been lost. There was one previous article that had been written, but even that he couldn't get published. I only found out about it because the historian, who was also a dentist, had sent a copy to the museum for their records. His story is a very unusual one, and the movie itself would have been a very expensive one to make, you know, a period piece with people with medical oddity, you know, with deformed people in it. So, you know, I was hoping that the book would introduce him to an audience and show that people are interested in this sort of material. There has been interest in Hollywood, but, you know, Hollywood is Hollywood, and until, you know, things are signed and contracts are made, it's all just talk. But I would love to see the book be, you know, put onto the screen, either the small screen or the big screen, simply because I think that Mutter's story is really inspirational. I mean, he came from a very poor background, an orphan without any financial means, and rose through the ranks of medicine purely on skill alone, and clashed with people on things that would be, you know, basic ideas today. The idea that you need to wash your hands in tools prior to procedures, the idea that you should treat your patient as a human being and not just a problem that needs to be solved, things like recovery rooms, which didn't exist prior to Mutter. You know, it's a fascinating journey, and, you know, I was thrilled to have the book sell as well as it did. It really, you know, confirmed my idea that, you know, stories of medical history are great and not just restricted to academia, but if you write them in a way that's engaging, will really bring in a mainstream audience as well. So I'm grateful for all the readers who picked it up and hope that even more readers discover it with the paperback.
We're visiting with Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz. She is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Dr. Mutter's Marvels. And the cover is very interesting because if somebody looked at this cover, they would probably think that it's a horror novel or, you know, something co-written by Stephen King. And I mean, that's what I thought at first when I first saw the cover.
Yeah, no, it's true. I have to admit, it does get used in a lot of Halloween displays. But it is, you know, it's sort of the weird, strange medical tools of the 19th century. And, you know, people always ask that about the museum itself, right? It's a museum of, you know, odd pathological specimens. And people are curious, why in the world would a doctor collect all of these things? But again, it's helpful to understand the 19th century mindset. And back then, before the, you know, photography, how do you show people what different medical conditions look like, especially really rare ones that might only happen once or twice or three times in your entire career? The way that you would do it is you would find these unusual examples and preserve them, either preserve them in liquid or dry them out or do incredibly detailed wax replicas so that you could teach future generations of doctors, if this ever comes on your doorstep, now you know what to do and this is what it looks like. And that's why Mutter amassed hundreds and hundreds of these unusual pathological specimens and replicas, and he felt passionate about them. He used them as teaching tools and as research tools. You know, some of the things were not his own patients, and he would challenge himself to think, if this came to my doorstep, you know, how would I fix it? And the Mutter Museum is because he was created because he wanted a home for it that was respectful. You know, very easily his collection could have been dissolved and sold to sideshows or put into bars or, you know, P.T. Barnum museums, but he insisted that a respectful home be created so that future generations could learn from it. People ask about, you know, is the Mutter Museum valid today? And a lot of the things that we no longer see, right, you know, birth defects, defects or horrible deformities, you know, because we've learned about nutrition or sanitation or have labor laws that prevent some of the horrible industrial accidents. These are things that are still happening in the third world. So the things you see in the Mütter exam that seem like from a different world, let alone a different era, are still things that happen in the world today, just not the first world. And so the Mütter Museum is visited very frequently by doctors from around the globe who see resurgence of some of these unusual cases in their own countries and come to the Mütter Museum to learn how to prevent it and how to treat it.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz. She is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Dr. Mütter's Marvels. As you mentioned earlier, the fact that Mütter was pretty much, well, he was an orphan, but when you read about him in your book, it starts almost like a Dickens novel because you picture this poor guy, you know, in rags. But he was also very clever as far as being able to get clothes and other stuff. I like that list that he wrote out.
You know, as a working class kid, you know, you kind of have to hustle to make things happen and find your ways around. And certainly Mütter was a genius at gaming the system. You know, you're mentioning in the book about how there's this very long clothing bill that appears in it. You know, even from a young age, he knew he kind of wanted to stand out. And as a 14-year-old, he ran up a very long clothing bill, a very expensive, you know, hats and silk scarves and gingham vests and cigars, to dress himself with because he realized he could charge his school for the clothing bill and then earn academic scholarships to pay off those bills. But that continued well into his life. The reason that he was able to get to Paris at all, having no money to make such a journey himself, was he read an article that said a warship had been sold to Russia that had been built in Philadelphia, and he went right to the shipyard and said, if you're going to sail this over to Russia, I can be your ship surgeon if you give me free passage. And, you know, he was 21 years old, freshly out of medical school, and had the gumption to do it, but it worked, and that is how he got to Europe. So, you know, his story is inspirational, not just for those in the medical field, but anyone who felt like the odds were stacked against them and had to find clever ways to achieve the goals that they wanted. Mütter was certainly a master at that.
As Dr. Mütter, when he went to Paris, and that's where he first learned about this new type of surgery called plastic surgery, and so he was very interested in that. And what we were discussing this producer and I before the program started about people who had their nose cut off or it fell off, and that was like a ritual that was done in India. Is that correct?
You know, you have these things that don't really happen too much in modern days, and one of them was having a nose that was missing. Now, in India, they would cut off noses for punishment. In the time that Mütter lived, you would have noses that would be diseased off. You know, you'd have diseases like syphilis that would slowly eat off a fleshy appendage like your nose, and you also had them cut off in battle or, more common in America, bitten off in bar brawls. And Mütter had to design surgeries that would essentially create a fake nose to put on the face so that these men and women could walk down the street. It's pretty amazing stuff. And again, all of those surgeries were done while the patients were awake. So pretty daring stuff indeed.
One of the things that really caught my attention too is that Mütter, besides being an excellent doctor, he was great also at being people, making them feel at home. And he was the one that I think you mentioned in your book was the first one to introduce a different type of lecturing in class, where not only did just the words come from the professor's mouth, but he encouraged participation.
You know, medical schools prior to Jefferson Medical College, which is the college that Mütter taught at, were essentially just lectures. You know, you would buy a lecture ticket and sit on a bench, and the professor would come out, and there would hardly be any illustrations. You certainly didn't have a patient there that showcased whatever, you know, ailment was being showcased in the lecture. And they just lectured at you and then closed their book and left. And that was what medical training was back then. Jefferson Medical College was the first one to have medical and surgical clinics. That meant that students got to see their professors interact with an actual patient and do diagnoses and treatments and sometimes surgeries in front of them. Mütter took it one step farther by introducing what was known as the quizzing system, meaning that when he would do lectures, he would pause and ask the students questions to make sure they understood the material he was teaching. And he also encouraged them to ask him questions. Again, that was totally different than the 19th century vision of what teaching was, which was you have an authoritative voice and he is going to speak. And if you can't follow it, then you're not very bright. Mütter wanted to make sure that above all else, that his philosophies and his thoughts on medicine were really absorbed by his students. So he engaged with them in an almost Socratic method that that really revolutionized how medicine was taught. And he was the first one in the country to do it.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz, and she is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Dr. Mütter's Marvels. Now, in this book also, you talk about the training that Dr. Mütter received in Paris and bedside manner and the way he acted. But the head, was he the head of the plastic surgery department or this doctor who people didn't want to make him mad because he would basically make people feel bad, the ones who already had some kind of disease or tumor, he would make them get down on their knees.
Oh, absolutely. This was Dr. Duprien, who was one of Mütter's heroes in terms of his surgical technique, but certainly not in the way that he treated his patients. And that's a really great example of how Mütter was different than his contemporaries. Dr. Duprien was a French surgeon who was one of the forefronters of creators of what was known as modern plastic surgery in Paris. And he would actually lead his patients into the surgical theater by sticking his fingers up their nose and pulling them by their nostrils and forcing them to his knees as he described their conditions, just totally dehumanizing. Mütter was 180 degrees away from that. He really believed in both preoperative and postoperative care of his patients. And he would spend days, if not weeks, working with patients prior to surgeries, because again, they'd be awake during the surgeries, to ensure that the patients knew what they were getting into, that they were desensitized through massage or touching to the certain instruments that were going to be doing work on him. And then afterwards, he actually, you know, again, invented the modern recovery room, which before hadn't existed. He demanded his institution, Jefferson Medical College, which is today's Jefferson University, to build them, and they didn't. They didn't understand why you would need that, and he spent his own money to rent a floor of a nearby restaurant, above a nearby restaurant, and would move his patients there so that he could take care of them after the surgeries, make sure that infections didn't set in, treat fevers as soon as they happened, and make sure that the patients followed his rules. And so all of this stuff was absolutely against the grain of 19th century medicine. And it's been really, you know, it was really interesting to see how hard people clashed, even on basic stuff, you know, like washing your hands and tools. Dr. Miggs, who is sort of the antagonist of the story, he was the chair of obstetrics at the same time that Mütter was the chair of surgery, actually lectured against insisting that doctors wash their hands, which seems ludicrous by today's standards. But he said to insist that doctors wash their hands prior to meeting with patients was to imply that doctors weren't gentlemen, quote, because all gentlemen were clean men. So even things that we basically take for granted were up for debate in that time. And it must have been infuriating for Mütter to know in his heart the things that he believed in were true, but that wouldn't be proven by modern medicine for decades after his death.
This, you bring this up in your book as well, and because of the hand washing and the materials sterilized, anything like that. It was Joseph Lister who introduced that to the people, letting them know about the germs. And so it makes you wonder if perhaps President Washington and President Garfield would have lived if doctors would have had you know, some of these rules.
Absolutely. You know, they definitely died. I mean, many people died. One of the interesting facts that I learned in researching Dr. Mütter's marvels was one of the reasons that ether anesthesia surgeries were so difficult to move forward. I mean, when ether anesthesia was discovered, I had assumed as a researcher that people would embrace it. I mean, why wouldn't you want your patient to be rendered unconscious for its surgery and then brought back to you know, consciousness afterwards? But one of the reasons that that doctors could choose not to do ether anesthesia surgeries was because the death rates for ether surgeries and non-ether surgeries were exactly the same, because it wasn't the surgeries themselves that were the killers. It was the infections that would happen afterwards. And infections were such a serious problem back then because they didn't know how to prevent them. Obviously, germ theory not proven for another 50 years. But in addition to that, they couldn't treat them. Antibiotics weren't invented either. So you had people who died at alarming rates from what were very basic surgeries. An interesting fact to sort of illustrate that is that for one, every soldier who was killed on the battlefield in the Civil War, two more died from an infection alone in hospitals. That's what a serious problem was. And again, these are things that we don't really have to worry about in modern society that was huge problems back then.
We're visiting with award-winning author Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz. So she is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Dr. Mutter's Marvels, and it talks about early medicine in the 19th century. And I was, as I was reading the book, I was also interested in the chapter that described as far as diseases or infections, anything that a woman had to deal with, because women were not treated in the best of ways back then, but then they also put them on display to teach the students, you know, what to do.
You know, women, you know, were absolutely treated horrendously during that time period. Not only was it illegal for you to even teach women medicine, but, you know, women were considered intellectually inferior. Again, we talk about Dr. Miggs. He was the chair of obstetrics, so literally teaching women's medicine to generations of doctors. And from the lecture pulpit, he would say things like that women's heads were too small for intellect, but just the right size for love. So thankfully, we have that. And he would teach that men were the masters and lords of women. I mean, from a scientific and medical standpoint. So the gulf of contempt that sort of philosophy taught generations of doctors was incredible. And you could see that in the way that women were treated during that time period. But then you had a person like Mutter. Mutter not only agreed in the equality biologically of the sexes, but also of the races. You know, at that time period, the biological equality of African Americans and white Americans was up for debate, which he found ludicrous. You know, obviously you could see it, you know, scientifically that when you cut them open, their insides are all the same. But because of the political climate of that time period, medical schools were taught to take a neutral stance on it. And Mutter, you know, did things like include African Americans as patients in his textbook, you know, which was, you know, absolutely controversial in his lifetime. So, you know, it must have been so difficult to be a doctor with a modern, you know, idea of what science and medicine should be, and live in a time that was so fraught, both politically and scientifically. The idea that he had to, you know, stand behind and defend ideas that would be so easily defendable with the invention of the modern microscope, the invention of X-rays, or the invention of any numerous scientific tools that wouldn't happen until, you know, the late 19th centuries or 1900s, must have been so frustrating. But it makes his story even more inspirational that his passion and intellect was still able to push the envelope of medicine so far, just based on his power of persuasion and the strength of his arguments.
And even with that, as you mentioned, because of his power of persuasion, the patients themselves, they felt safe in his hands because he had a very good bedside manner. Whereas in other doctors, other operations, as you mentioned in your book, they were willing to take the risk of possibly dying on the operating table because they could live perhaps a better life.
Yeah, absolutely. The population that he was most devoted to was definitely underrepresented, almost ignored by medicine. They were categorized as monsters. That was a medical term back then, just like idiot was a medical term. And you know, he gave them hope. I mean, they really had no surgeries designed to help some of these deformities, including burned women, you know, and that was a very common injury in the 19th century when you had women who worked, you know, cooked at home in front of open flames and wore multiple layers of flammable clothing that were very tightly corseted around their waists. You know, it was very easy for their dresses to catch on fire and then be unable to get out of them in time and have these horrible facial burns. And, you know, Dr. Mutter's Marvels is over 80 illustrations in it, all from the time period. And you see some of these deformed people. And all of the deformed patients that you see in the book, the engravings, are all of Mutter's actual patients. So it's incredible to imagine some of these people coming to Mutter and saying, you know, please help me, and that he was able to help them with the limited, things, you know, tools at his hands is really amazing.
We're visiting with Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz. She is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Dr. Mutter's Marvels. Kristen, as we're wrapping up this interview, if you could give us perhaps a website or a Facebook page, whatever, that people can find out more about your book and also the museum.
Absolutely. You can go to my website, which is aptowitz.com. That's A, P as in Peter, T as in Tom, OWICZ.com. I'm also on Twitter at COAptowitz.com. I have a Facebook fan page, Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz. And the Mutter Museum has an incredible social media presence. You can follow them on Twitter at the Mutter Museum. And they have a YouTube channel, which is a must-see. They have a really great feature called What's at the Curator's Desk, where they bring an unusual medical specimen or tool out and ask the people, you know, watching to guess what they think it is, and then they reveal it the following week. So definitely follow them on YouTube. The channel is Mutter Museum.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Kristen O'Keefe Aptowitz, the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Dr. Mutter's Marvels. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines. Thank you, Kristen.